GBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
app. ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Five staff members of the United Nations have been killed in Sudan. UN officials says aid workers were attacked in their homes, beaten, and held at gunpoint. It comes as people are trying to flee.
We are in close communication with U.S. citizens and individuals affiliated with the U.S. government to provide information on all available departure routes for those seeking to depart safely.
State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel. White House confirming the ISIS-K mastermind behind the 2021 Kabul airport attack that killed 13 U.S. service members has been killed in a Taliban operation. In Washington... President Biden speaking to the National Association of Building Trades Union hours after announcing his bid for re-election. Striking Pennsylvania Coca-Cola bottling union members rejecting the company's latest contract offer. Union members say they want more than the 17% increases Coca-Cola's offering. This is ABC News. The FDA has approved a first-of-its-kind drug for a rare genetic mutation of Lou Gehrig's disease, regulators, though, requiring further research to confirm it really helps patients. Mattel is getting even more inclusive with the first-ever Down Syndrome Barbie.
The big reveal done by Rebecca Jarvis on Good Morning America. National Down Syndrome Society President and CEO Candy Pickard says the doll is a little shorter in stature.
Which is typical for people with Down Syndrome. Has smaller features. You see the almond-shaped eyes. You see the bridge of the nose.
Kayla McEwen is a National Down Syndrome Society spokesperson. She is thrilled.
It is incredible. And it's definitely going to be a bestseller today.
The Fashionista Barbie with Down Syndrome on sale now online. It'll be in stores this summer. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
According to court documents, Prince William quietly got a very large sum of money in a 2020 settlement with News Group Newspapers owned by Rupert Murdoch for phone hacking. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Senator Tammy Baldwin is asking the Army about the controlled burn of Fort McCoy that may have sparked a 3,000-acre wildfire. Military leaders say they don't know for sure yet if they're to blame. The Biden administration is siding with the Lac des Flambeaux tribe in a lawsuit over road closures on its reservation. The tribe says it's owed millions of dollars for the roads that connect several homes to town. In sports, Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst is asking for patience as he puts the finishing touches on the Aaron Rodgers trade to the New York Jets.
It's not done, and I'm trained by Ted Thompson until the final, T's are crossed and I's are dotted.
The two teams are swapping first-round picks and making other conditional moves. Also, the Bucks face playoff elimination after last night's loss to Miami. The Brewers fell to Detroit. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come take it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media network of local radio stations here for you.
Orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, it was a child labor briefing, and I can't believe it. And you've heard me say this before. I cannot believe that we're in this moment talking about kids going back to work. It just blows my mind. But there is a member-level child labor briefing by the Department of Labor's principal deputy administrator to that committee. And you go, how is it that this has even gone this far? The fact that states across this country are well organized in pushing a repeal of a lot of the labor laws that we put in place to protect children, to ensure that they go to school, that they get an education, that they have an opportunity to be kids. I mean, it's nuts to me, but this is where we are. And Iowa has been out in front leading the horrible charge. And that's why I've asked Iowa State Senator and Democratic leader Zach Walls to come talk with us. I saw Zach give a speech on one of the social media platforms, and I said, I got to get this guy to come share some thoughts. Zach, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, really happy to be here.
So let's start with right from the beginning. I mean, I cannot believe that we're in this moment. I can't wrap my head around the idea that people sitting in the same chamber that you're in are okay with 14-year-olds going into meatpacking plants, doing dangerous. I'm struggling with that. Help me if you can.
Well, you and me both, Rick. You know, that was one of, I would say, the most heartless debates that I've ever been a part of in the Iowa Senate, and we've had some really bad ones. And, you know, the reality, of course, is that Iowa is facing a workers' crisis. But rather than raising wages, rather than trying to make our state more attractive to new workers, what Senate Republicans and Governor Kim Reynolds are doing is trying to allow Iowa kids, you know, young teenagers, to work more dangerous jobs. I would say that they have this attempt to roll back protections that have been in place for decades. And frankly, it's a pretty radical redefinition of what it means to be a young person. You know, if you're anything like me, I worked jobs when I was a teenager.
Sure.
They were incredibly rewarding and enriching experiences. We don't have a problem with teenagers working in age-appropriate, safe conditions. What we have a problem with is this idea that you're going to allow 16 or 17-year-olds to serve alcohol, that you're going to allow them to work in hazardous or dangerous occupations like roofing or excavation or demolition. And you're not just endangering the kids themselves, but the adults working around them. There's a reason why we have these fair labor and child labor laws to protect against that kind of exploitation, and Republicans are trying to roll that back. It's shocking.
No, and you used the word that I was going to use. I mean, I'm not against kids learning good work ethic. I want my kids to have good work ethic. They've always had jobs that they've done, but they've not been the exploitative kind of jobs. They've not been the dangerous jobs. They're not the ones that are competing with their parents to put food on the table. These are learning jobs, not career jobs. And that to me is a struggle because, you know, I want kids to have good work ethic. I had a paper route at 8 years old. Taught me enormous lessons. This isn't what we're talking about.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, the proposal that Republicans have put forward, I mean, fundamentally, it takes Iowa in the wrong direction. Just like you said, you know, we want Iowa kids to have enriching work experiences that prepare them for lifelong careers, right? But the changes that Senate Republicans made in their legislation, it just opens the door for exploitation and for dangerous work that could get Iowa kids injured or even killed. You know, there was and we were talking about this during the break, there was this investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor recently. They wound up making a seven-figure penalty to a food sanitation company that was hiring, you know, over 100 children in states across the Midwest, kids as young as 13 years old doing sanitation work in meatpacking plants. I mean, this is really radical, radical stuff that Republicans are putting forward. And the thing that I'll say, you know, this bill doesn't say that what happened in that situation is okay, but it's all about the kind of culture that you're creating, right? Republicans want a culture where those kinds of things are going to be more common and not less. I think that any common sense person would look at an investigation like what the U.S. Department of Labor did and said, what we should be doing is strengthening protections against child labor. In Iowa, Republicans did exactly the opposite.
Now, what was interesting to me, and you, obviously you know the law much better than I do, that went through. One of the things that caught my attention was the immunity shield that Republicans seem to love mm-hmm. for corporations. Can you explain a little bit better than I can this idea that if I'm getting this right, if there's a program between a school and an employer, and the kid gets hurt, the employer's not responsible. They're immune. Is the school responsible? Are the parents responsible? Is the kid just out of luck? How do they justify that? How do they justify that?
Well, I mean, Rick, frankly, there is no justification. I mean, they for many years, Iowa was a state that prided itself on having a moderate government, either center left or center right. Instead, what we've seen in the last several years since Republicans took the trifecta is this increasingly radical march towards kind of the ultra right wing. And it's really hard to watch, obviously, because Iowa for decades was, like I said, a very moderate state. We voted for some Republicans. We voted for some Democrats. But we were pretty close to the middle. And what's happened, I mean, this has mostly really happened since Donald Trump's rise in 2016, is you've seen this march further and further and further to the right. And so, you know, this child labor bill, I mean, again, they're justifying the whole thing is trying to say that they're going to solve this worker shortage that we have here. But we know that policing children in unsafe working conditions, that's not a solution.
Yeah, I mean, just the premise from the start, we're going to solve our worker shortage by exploiting children. That's a sentence that should not be spoken.
100% on the literal backs of children. I mean, think about how twisted that is. And again, this isn't about, from my perspective, this isn't about saying teenagers are already able under current Iowa law to work in safe, appropriate professions. And by the way, we're not just talking about, you know, working at a grocery store. I mean, you know, you can give teenagers really serious responsibility. I was a lifeguard when I was a teenager. I mean, you're talking about situations where if something goes wrong, you're literally expected to go pull somebody who's drowning out of water, right? We're not saying that kids can't or teenagers can't be trusted with responsibility. What we're saying is that the law should protect them against being exploited in unsafe work environments that jeopardize their health or development and their ability to earn an income. Right. So we introduced amendments that would have said basically because think about it, right? If you're a teenager and you get hurt on the job and your workers' compensation is tied to your earnings and you're a teenager, I mean, you're in big trouble, right? And so we said, look, there are other professions where we have decided if you're a volunteer firefighter, right, you're not getting paid anything, but it's a dangerous profession. If you get hurt as a volunteer firefighter, you should be able to get fair compensation, workers' compensation, even though you don't have adequate earnings. And Republicans said no.
Wow.
Right. And Rick, I don't know if this even got on your radar, but during this debate, Senate Republicans actually decided to stop answering questions at all on the floor. You know, historically, the back and forth of debate, asking Republican senators questions about what's in the bill, trying to establish legislative intent. I mean, that has been historically, any deliberative body.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So the question that I have out of this then, because I wanted to get to this, Is this emanating from legislators in Iowa, or is this part of a much bigger scheme? Because we're seeing these bills popping up in other states. I mean, I look at the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, who has all this model legislation. Is there a body out there saying child labor is our thing and we're moving this across in states across the country? Are you seeing that? Because, look, if you can't answer a question about your bill, tells me you didn't write it.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And we have seen a Florida-based operation. It's called the Opportunity Solutions Project. They've been working in Iowa for several years now. Before this year, most of their work had been targeting our social safety net, going after things like food stamps, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and other forms of public assistance that so many Iowa families depend on because corporations are paying such low wages. And so many families are still struggling to get by. And that was true, you know, before this year. And now this new outfit, this Opportunity Solutions Project, which, I mean, it sounds like something that like an artificial intelligence chatbot came up with. It's just gobbledygook. It doesn't mean anything. You know, they basically are now pushing this bill forward on the child labor piece. My understanding is not just in Iowa, but across the country. And so I don't know if this is associated with Ron DeSantis somehow, Florida or whatever. But there's certainly, I think, you're seeing this very hands-on approach, part of the systematic rollback happening at the state level. You know, and my guess, Rick, is that you're going to start to see this new Supreme Court stacked with these, you know, Republican justices, essentially is they can, just like they did, you know, on the abortion issue, push that power from the federal level back down to the state level. What might be happening here is that this Opportunity Solutions Project is kind of getting out in front of that. You know, maybe there's a challenge coming into the federal level to some of the fair labor or child labor protections that are out there. And so they're trying to kind of preempt it almost at the state level.
No, all these groups with these euphemistic names, like, you know, the Institute for the Love of Puppies, you know, they have nothing but nefarious means at the end of it. And this is one of those. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Iowa State Senator Zach Walls. He is also the Democratic leader there. Let me ask you this, because, you know, you brought up food stamps a moment ago. It seems like all of this stuff is, you know, attacking working people, and there seems to be that playbook. Is it all this opportunity solution people, or are there other actors involved in this? Because it looks to me, and again, as you said a moment ago, Iowa had always been a fairly moderate state, fairly middle of the road. I mean, one of my favorite people, Tom Arkins, I was a senator there for years. It seems like there's a radical agenda. Food stamps, you know, the bill that you guys had was insane. Now there's this legislation going through to strip the Auditor General of its powers. There's a lot going on here to not just tear apart our social safety net, but also tear apart the very checks and balances, the very democratic processes that we've come to expect out of our country.
Yeah, Rick, that's absolutely right. So, I mean, tomorrow we actually just got the debate calendar. Senate Republicans will be debating and almost certainly passing a bill that will strip our auditor of state, who not coincidentally is the only statewide elected Democrat left in Iowa, Auditor Rob Sand, will essentially strip him of his ability to actually conduct investigations and actually audit and be an effective watchdog for taxpayers. What Republicans are doing is taking our watchdog, putting them in the kennel, and throwing away the key, right? You can't be an effective watchdog if you don't have the ability to subpoena people and investigate people and get answers to tough questions. That's the whole point. And again, that goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago with Republicans refusing to answer questions on the Senate floor, refusing to give the public the answers that they deserve about the legislation that the highest deliberative body, the Iowa Senate, is considering. It also goes to something that is, I mean, so hard to talk about. You almost can't believe that it's true. But this year, for the first time that anyone here can remember, when Senate Republicans introduced their state budgets, right? We all know what a budget is. It's the numbers that you use to plan how you're going to spend your money. Republicans introduced budgets that didn't have numbers. We called these blank check budgets. You know, it's funny to me because Republicans will say, oh, Democrats don't know what a woman is because they support rights for transgender people. Apparently, Iowa Republicans don't know what a budget is because they said that these were budgets and they didn't even have numbers in them. I mean, give me a break. And so now we're debating these budgets, and the actual numbers are getting filled in at the 11th hour. Public had no opportunity to weigh in. It's just these step after step after step towards one party rule and no consideration of a lowercase d democratic process at all.
No, look, it's not just Iowa. I look at what Ron DeSantis did in Florida, you know, throwing that prosecutor off. I look at a lot of the talk of legislation in places like Georgia to go after prosecutors. I mean, there's a lot of this kind of fascistic, you know, behavior going on. And it's one of those things where, you know, the Maya Angelou quote, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. Yeah. I'm looking at the Republican Party right now, and this is an anti-democratic party who hates working people. I say it all the time. Republicans hate working people. Look at what they're doing, and look what they did to your state. I mean, the food stamp thing, the child labor thing, the education bill that we didn't even talk about. There is so much bad going on. So my last question for you is this resonating with anyone? I mean, are your constituents seeing this? Are people getting it, or are they on the outrage side?
No, so Rick, I've been a state senator since 2018, and I've been the Senate Minority Leader since 2020. So we're just finishing my third session now as leader. And one of the things that we've really launched this year is a renewed effort to do two particular things. One, engaging our labor partners, making sure that we're talking to our leadership, trying to get in front of their membership to hear their questions, listen to them, dialogue with them. We've had these meetings across the state, over in Council Bluffs in Western Iowa, and just this past Saturday in Burlington, which is in southeast Iowa, a historic manufacturing community right along the Mississippi River. And questions about public education were on everybody's mind. Your listeners have probably seen some of these bills introduced across the country, things attacking our public education system, taking $1 billion out of our public education system over the next 4 years, handing those over to private school that are this voucher program. And we're already seeing, by the way, the ink on that law is just drying, and private schools in Iowa are already saying, well, yeah, don't worry, we're going to raise tuition. So it's this huge scam. It's going to hurt working people. It's going to hurt public education and all the families who depend on it. And I do think that you're seeing in that Burlington town hall, people wanted to talk about public education more than any other topic. Not only the private school voucher program, but attempts to ban books, to go after teachers, to put them in jail. I mean, things that sound, you know, just dystopian, like they're out of 1984 or Animal Farm, but instead that's what's happening. And I think the thing that's so important, we can't let Republicans divide us. That's what they're trying to do with all of this stuff. They're trying to pit us against each other to say, oh, this is about attacking transgender kids, or oh, this is about attacking, you know, people of color, whatever the case may be. And we have to say no. We know that there's power in solidarity. We know that when people come together, we can fight for a common good that we share. We can't let the fear and the hatred divide us. We have to come together. That's what this is all about.
There you go. Zach, I appreciate you taking some time. As this stuff continues, I'd love to have you come back and share some more with us. Because, look, I think Iowa is like ground zero and horrible. So anything we can do to help, let me know. I appreciate your time.
I look forward to being back again.
Thanks so much, Senator Zach Walls. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
It's really amazing what has happened to Iowa. And like I said, you know, we went through there in October, and everyone we talked to, you know, was saying, "Look, the state's getting more radical. It's the media culture that has just gripped the right wing talk radio, the F channel, all of this that has pushed them in this direction of fear." Because look, people are struggling. People are struggling to make ends meet. And, you know, you see all of this money going in there, pushing in a direction to undo public education, to undo restrictions for child labor, to, you know, to tatter the social safety net even more. And that, interestingly enough, you know, in talking with the people while we were there, that was part of who they were, the pride of community. And they're really tearing it apart. So for me, the question becomes, do people wake up and see what's happening around them? Or, you know, is it that, you know, you're in the boiling water? I don't know. Interesting story that was somebody sent me. I don't talk an awful lot about COVID because the whole COVID thing is, you know, probably the worst case of Monday morning quarterbacking ever. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem of what we did to keep people safe. I think we probably went maybe a little too conservative. But the reality is grandma didn't die. And what I find interesting is the people who say, "Oh, it was all a hoax. There's no big deal because we're still alive." That kind of makes me laugh because we did all of these things to keep people safe. Now, did we do some things wrong? Yeah, always. You're always going to do some things wrong. There's always going to be someone to Monday morning quarterback. Now, there were some things that were plain crazy. And one of them came from my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, where there was a doctor, and you may remember her. She was the one who went in front of the Ohio Senate and said that, actually it was the House. It wasn't the Senate. I want to be completely accurate. It was the House. She testified that... How did it go? That people are being magnetized by the vaccine. That if you took the, you know, the dreaded shot, that you now had keys sticking to your forehead, and that there was an interface between the vaccine and the 5G towers. I'm not sure what that interface was, but I gotta assume it was, you know, something to make you crazy, or I don't even know. But you remember she was mocked pretty badly about it. Evidently, and this is the story that the headline was, is, you know, Ohio doctor says coronavirus vaccines make you magnetic. The state wants to pull her license. So the right has been losing their mind, going, "We're going to defend her." And I'm going, how can you possibly defend her? It's not even about the stupid stuff she said when you bother to read the article. And this is why it's so important to have all of the facts and not just a headline that someone wrote after the fact. The reality is evidently after she testified, the state board went, the state medical board of Ohio went to investigate her. They regulate physicians. Now, whatever that reason was, she decided to ignore the subpoena. She decided to ignore everything and just not participate, refused to cooperate. So they're saying, well, you know, if you're not going to cooperate, we're going to have to pull your license until you do. Now, this is one of those funny moments where you go, so she doesn't recognize the body that oversees her profession that she has a license to, but she's fighting to hold on to the license from a body that she doesn't recognize, who she believes is unconstitutional, which is crazy. It's a lot of crazy talk. But this is, sadly, this is sadly who a lot of people pay attention to. And this is how our politics have gotten so out of hand. This woman testified in front of a House committee at the behest of a legislator who said, please come spew your nonsense. Please come tell everybody that they're magnetic now that they've gotten. And look, I've not had a key. In fact, I lose my keys all the time. There's part of me that goes, I wish I were magnetic so I wouldn't lose my damn keys. But it'll be interesting to see if they actually do follow through and pull her license. And honestly, if I'm in the greater Cleveland area, I'm probably not going to see her as a doctor. Just kind of throwing that out there. Seems a little quacky to me. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Would you go to a doctor who said that if you got the vaccine, you'd be magnetic, or there was an interface between the whatever was in it and the 5G towers that aren't there yet? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1978. That was the day of an important victory for any woman in the United States with a pension. The Supreme Court handed down its decision in a case known as Los Angeles Water Department versus Manhart. Manhart and a group of current and past female employees at the department had sued. The women were required to pay more into their pension than were the men. The reason for this policy was that women lived longer on average. That meant that the 2,000 women employed at the water department had to contribute nearly 15% more than their 10,000 male co-workers. The women argued that this violated Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which prohibited discrimination based on gender. The case wound its way through the court system. The ACLU filed a brief in support of the women's cause at the U.S. Supreme Court. The women won their case in a 6-2 decision. The majority of justices decided that even if women lived longer than men as a group, it would be impossible to know how long each individual woman might live. Therefore, individual women could not be held to a different standard for their pensions. The case was an important affirmation of the protections of the Civil Rights Act. Yet despite this victory, the women were not returned any of the extra money they had been required to pay into their pensions. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, writing for the majority, found that such retroactive payments could be, quote, devastating for a pension fund. He wrote that, quote, administrators of retirement plans must be given time to adjust gradually to Title VII's demands. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Given the rabid right-wingism of most Republican office holders in my state of Texas, you might assume that the climate here is only fit for rattlesnakes, scorpions, and venomous critters of pious political extremism. Yet, the true Texas political character, historically and currently, is vehemently anti-corporate and deeply rooted in the uniting ethic of the common good. For an historic example, look to the state's first constitution. It outlawed banks and required a 2/3 vote of the legislature to form a corporation. And today, grassroots Texans in the rural town of Llano have just demonstrated the power of progressive community values that are common in this supposedly conservative state. The issue was book banning. A batch of political extremists had decided to purge the public library of 17 books. Porno, they shrieked. Yet none are pornographic. They're simply about ideas and realities that Republican culture war zealots don't like. Namely, books documenting the history of institutional racism in America and the normality of America's LGBTQ community. Common Sense Llano locals rebelled, suing the county government for autocratically trying to control the people's freedom to read and learn. And a federal judge has now ruled that the book banning was flagrantly unconstitutional, ordering the targeted titles back on the shelves. Then, in a collective spasm of knee-jerk ignorance and arrogance, the county's book-banning officials announced that, by gollies, they would just defund and shut down the entire library system. Yeah, that'll teach people to respect authority. Again, though, locals rebelled, turning out in force to protest the officials' political chicanery, forcing them to reverse their closure scheme. This is Jim Hightower saying, as one 10-year-old student in Llano succinctly testified, it's not the county's job to burn the library down. The Hightower...
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, lots of fun and entertainment on the Twitters today. The Blue Check Mafia out in full force defending their boy, Schmucker Carlson. A couple of my favorites, you know, Marjorie Trainwreck Green. Cable news is about to be taught a powerful lesson after Fox News caved to the woke mob and fired Tucker Carlson. Americans no longer blindly watch the news like they did decades ago. They only watch the ones who have the courage to tell the truth. Americans are about to quit watching. And my thought is the truth. Which truth are we talking about? Are we talking about the truth that he came on air and said, this is the truth? Or the truth that he was emailing about how the people watching this are all dupes and how he believed none of it? I'm just curious, which alternative truth do we believe? And here to share some thoughts on the whole shenanigans, I've asked Madeline Peltz to come talk with us. She's the Media Matters Deputy Director of Rapid Response. Madeline, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is where my mind's at. Which truth are we talking about?
I think that we will see the various truths unfold over the next few days. Obviously, the news of Tucker Carlson's ouster has been shrouded in mystery, a lot of speculation about how exactly we ended up here. And certainly it was a sudden outcome. I don't think anyone saw it coming. It's difficult to overstate exactly how much of an impact this will have on not only cable news, but cable in general. And it remains to be seen exactly what led to this outcome. But I think that there's a lot of people who want to clear up their role in this, and certainly I think there will be a lot of chatter among the mainstream press in the coming days.
There's part of me that goes, it happened so quickly, and I gotta think this has gotta be one of those elevator things, because if Fox News was really gonna get rid of him, they would have transitioned, they would have done some triangulations, whatever. This seems to me like this was a personal thing. Somebody said something on the elevator, he was called into a meeting, Rupert didn't like it, and it was that kind of knee-jerk. That's where my mind thought is. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that I didn't see it ending like this. I think the fact that they were running a promo for his show later that night, about 10 minutes before the news broke that he had been terminated, is somewhat of a smoking gun, that this was extremely sudden. If it's not a smoking gun, then it is truly a comedy of errors. But I think based on what I've been reading, there has been a lot of surprise within the building at Fox News about this outcome. There was a report today that Tucker Carlson found out 10 minutes before he was terminated that there was a press release going out. I don't know whether or not that's going to hold up to be the case, but it's pretty extraordinary. I think that it likely has something to do with the lawsuit he's facing in New York of creating a hostile work environment brought by a former producer. And that stems from Fox's, that stems from her testimony in the Dominion case. And so all of these things are deeply intertwined with each other. And I think it is, it's certainly a big media drama and the talk of the town today.
Yeah, look, I'm happy to see some sanity going on over there, but because it seems to me that the check went out and they go $787 million. That's a lot of money. And oh, by the way, as you pointed out, he's got a suit, they've got a suit, there's another suit. It seems like the pockets may be only so deep. So You know, maybe that was part of the purge. Anybody else on the chopping block? I know there was talk of Maria Bartiromo and the judge Janine. Are they next? Are they on the chopping block?
I haven't heard. I'm not. I will be the first to tell you, but I don't know. I think it's really stunning that Maria Bartiromo is still at the network. I'm not exactly sure what she brings. Besides being a completely unhinged liability. And it's really her, I mean, the trajectory of her career is so unusual. She started as a trailblazer for women in financial television and is now widely regarded as a crackpot. And I don't know exactly what audience she's bringing to Fox or why they're protecting her. But she's still there. Not only is Judge Janine still there, but there's been reporting in the industry press that she is featured prominently in their pitch to advertisers as they approach the major ad buying season in their in the way that the ads are bought and sold cyclically on cable news. And she is a big part of the pitch that they're putting forward. And that, again, it shows that Fox has not learned its lesson and has no intention to moderate.
Yeah, because I'm waiting to see who's next. Because you know, someone asked me, "Go, you think they're going to try and come back to the center?" I go, "No. They're going further than Tucker. Tucker will be moderate. We will look back. We will pine for the days of the moderate Tucker Carlson by the time Fox is done with this, because they understand what sells. And the line that I keep coming back to, you know, Uncle Rupert gave it to us. It's not red or blue. It's green. And they understand what brings in the green, and crazy brings in the green."
Yeah, Tucker's not, I mean, he was the biggest voice in cable news. He had the biggest ratings, or among the biggest ratings, on the best rated network. But with that being said, in the absence of Trump, his influence was not what it was in 2018, 19, 2020, that it is in 2023. And at a certain point, all of these things that have piled up in the last few months and weeks, the Kevin McCarthy giving him the January 6 tapes, the Ray Epps thing that was on 60 Minutes, that all of the revelations from the Dominion suit, at a certain point, it's just not worth the headache.
Yeah. Any chance it was the Epps thing? I mean, there were a lot of people saying, well, you know, they brought this up, this could be more. Any chance that was it? It seems mild to me, given the stuff that they've done over the years, but any chance that that has a part of it?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that that could really be the main reason. But with that being said, it's not hard for me to imagine Rupert Murdoch watching 60 Minutes and being totally over it, essentially saying, "How I'm not going through this again," should another defamation suit come down. And the Ray Epps coverage was terrible, just like the Seth Rich coverage was terrible. It's just going into this critical ad buying season, as well as high profile contract renegotiations with cable carriers. Fox is circling the wagons, and it seems like Tucker Carlson may not have been willing to play ball behind the scenes.
As we're a Hannity, I think Hannity perfectly will do whatever you want. Hannity's your boy. He will follow the commands, which is why I think he's perfectly safe.
Yeah, I think that he has learned some of the lessons that came with the outrage cycles from his show during the Trump administration, and he is simply not as influential among the Republican Party as Tucker Carlson has come to be in recent years. And so, yeah, I mean, Sean Hannity knows what the line is, and Tucker Carlson knows what the line is too. He just doesn't care.
Yeah. Well, again, it comes back to that. Like I said, like Rupert said, it's not about red or blue. It's about green. And they get that. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Madeline Peltz. She's the Deputy Director of Rapid Response at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do there and follow along. So what is this going to mean for Fox? What does this mean for you know, the cable news world? I mean, you saw Don Lemon fired. Now you got Tucker fired. And it seems like the cycle's moving crazier to the extreme. Do you see Tucker landing at OAN or one of the other more radical right-wing outlets? Or does he start his own little shindig?
I don't see him landing at another cable network like OAN or Newsmax. First of all, I don't think that they can afford them. One American News simply doesn't have the distribution for Tucker to be interested. And so I don't see him landing at another cable network. It's also very possible that he's under a non-compete that could last for years before he's able to transition into the next phase of his career. And in terms of digital right-wing media, the space is very overcrowded. You've got Steven Crowder, you've got The Daily Wire, you've got The Blaze, you've got The Daily Caller. These are all outlets that are not only competing with each other, but cannibalizing each other's audiences. And it's really not fruitful ground for a personality like Tucker Carlson. He will end up somewhere. It's very possible that this right-wing video hosting rival to YouTube, it's called Rumble, and is backed by Peter Thiel, that they are scaling up a robust exclusive creators program. It's possible he could end up there, depending on what the non-compete says, but he will never be the same Tucker Carlson that he was on Friday ever again. It is impossible for him to garner the same audience that Fox News has. The 8 p.m. hour of Fox News is a legacy hour. Tucker Carlson got lucky. He inherited Bill O'Reilly's audience, and it was a built-in floor of ratings that he took O'Reilly's model and simply supercharged it. And now, none of that would have been possible without Fox as an institution. And so it'll never, ever be the same for him again.
No, it's going to be interesting to see where he lands and how this goes. But if you listen to the Musk marks on Twitter, the folks with the blue check mafia who are just all in. In fact, you know, the reason that Tucker was fired was simply because he had the audacity to tell the truth and refused to let Fox News control him. Which you go, I think we're touching in that alternative reality a little too much, and what it is we're drinking or smoking is not helping.
Well, that exact crowd of right-wing influencers on Twitter, they are big losers in this too, because no one was giving a platform as big of a platform to the likes of Libs of TikTok or Glenn Greenwald as Tucker Carlson tonight was. And there will be no platform that will come in and sweep up that same cast of characters and provide them with a microphone like Tucker. And so they are mad, and because they've suffered a loss in this as well.
Yeah, I feel their pain. Let's go with that. I'm feeling their pain. So where do we see this going? Again, I mean, you're the one, you follow this stuff. I've never, just between you and me, I've never actually watched Tucker's show. I've seen clips, but I've never actually watched it on TV. In fact, I want nothing to do with Fox News. What fills that gap? I mean, are we seeing someone coming up? I mean, Jesse Waters, you know, took over for O'Reilly and kind of filled that space. Is there an up and coming person that we were seeing maybe fill in this spot? What are you thinking?
It's hard to say. Fox, frankly, has a shallow bench. A lot of people are floating Jesse Waters. I think Jesse Waters would not be as successful in the 8 p.m. hour, either as Tucker Carlson or as he is now in the 7 p.m. hour. And so that wouldn't be my first choice if I was leading Fox News. There's a number of other peripheral figures at the network, like Pete Hegseth, Judge Jeanine, as you mentioned, and others who potentially could take over the 8 p.m. hour. But again, impossible to fill the shoes of Tucker Carlson in terms of his influence in the Republican Party and internally at Fox News. And I think that my personal opinion, and not everyone agrees with me, but I think that it's possible that there is from this digital right-wing media ecosystem a figure like a Candace Owens who could come in and take over and leverage their viral social media audience to create some new energy at the 8 p.m. hour for Fox News. But that is a really high bar to clear for someone who doesn't come from a TV background, and they are in really a difficult place where their 8 p.m. hour is vacant ahead of the ad buying season and these cable contract negotiations.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because, you know, look, Fox has been the center of that right-wing echo chamber for so long. And, you know, I know a lot of my left friends are like, oh, my God, this is the end of them. Another lawsuit. All this could be the I'm going, no, they'll be fine. They're going to find their way. And I think they're going to be crazier on the other side. But it is entertaining to watch this this moment. Do you see anything? Last question I've got for you. Do you see anything positive coming out of this? I know I've had a bunch of people say, well, this is good for democracy. We're going to media is going to, you know, moderate because of these lawsuits. Do you see anything good out of this?
Well, I don't think that lawsuits are the way to resolve a problem like Fox News. I think that the case with Dominion was just an extraordinary body of evidence that that was able to take a defamation case farther than anyone anticipated, just based on the sheer volume of evidence. So I don't hope that we are litigating the press in the courts. With that being said, Tucker Carlson losing his slot is an enormously important achievement for protecting democracy. I think about what is going on in Missouri right now with transgender people losing access to gender affirming care and the panic that is spreading throughout that community in that state. And it's people like Tucker Carlson who have been driving that hate campaign and fear campaign. And without that microphone in his hand in the same way, it will alleviate some pressure on anti-trans hysteria that has taken hold in the Republican Party. That said, it's not going away. It's still a big fight that we need to fight for, but there is no one who has participated in this hate campaign with as big of a microphone as Tucker Carlson. And so I am hopeful that this will slow down the momentum of legislation in the states that is attacking LGBTQ folks and communities.
That's going to be interesting to see where this plays out. But Madeline, I appreciate you sharing a little time with us. Thanks for your insight. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks so much.
Good stuff, Madeline Peltz. Make sure you check out the work she does over at Media Matters, where she is the Deputy Director of Rapid Response, MediaMatters.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Love the talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. The governor of South Carolina sent 1,000 state troopers and National Guardsmen to Charleston, South Carolina. They were sent there to deal with the striking hospital workers who wanted union recognition. The strike had started on March 19th at the Medical College Hospital. A little over a week later, more than 60 black workers from the Charleston County Hospital joined the strike in solidarity. The governor was determined to use every tactic at his disposal to break the strike. He worried that if the strikers were successful, unionization efforts would spread throughout the other sectors of state employees. During the strike, a hotel room of one of the union organizers was bombed by an unknown assailant. Soldiers with bayonets marched through the streets of Charleston. Hundreds of picketers were arrested, including teenagers who had joined the protest. The governor had gone as far as imposing a 9 p.m. curfew on people to keep them off the streets. But the workers were determined to win their rights. The United Auto Workers sent $10,000 to support the striking workers. Civil rights leaders from across the nation came to South Carolina to support the workers. Andrew Young and Ralph Abernathy of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference were among those who were arrested. Coretta Scott King, the widow of Dr. King, gave a speech saying, "Hospital workers have been working full-time jobs at part-time pay. After all, $1.30 an hour is not a wage, it is an insult. I also have another interest in being here," she said, "and that is many of the hospital workers throughout our nation are women, black women. Many of them are the main supporters of their families." The hospital workers were able to win a grievance process and modest pay increase. Although they did not win union recognition, they inspired hospital workers across the country. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. So our quote of the day comes from the Donald over on the Truth Socials. I still can't get that Truth Social thing out of my head. But Trump socialed out. The fact that Tucker Carlson will no longer be on Fox News is a big blow to cable news and to America. Tucker was insightful, interesting, and ratings gold. And, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, suck up much? Because the only person who could really, I think, tear Trump apart would be Tucker. I mean, and my mind goes back to that Monday interview that he did where, you know, Tucker Carlson, after we know all the things that he said about Trump in emails and all of the things that he believed about the election nonsense that was being thrown out, that he sat there fairly neutered and didn't press Trump at all and, you know, bobbed his head like he was supposed to, let Donald finish, you know, that kind of stuff. There used to be an old profession that used to do that too, but now that Tucker's gone, Trump's got to kind of, I think, worry a little bit, because if Tucker comes out and goes, "I'm going to go after him," it could be interesting. Could be interesting. I do find it funny that, you know, Trump wants to get the old gang back together. Evidently, there has been some rumblings about bringing Kellyanne Conway back. That ought to be fun. I'm not sure if she's going to come back, but it'll be interesting. Now on the Tucker thing, I got a couple of emails from folks saying no, that I was probably right in that it was a personal thing between Tucker and Rupert Murdoch. I think this is one of those things that were just a bridge too far. And one of the theories now being floated, one of the theories is, and I didn't know this until I just got the email, is that I guess last Friday Tucker had given a speech to the Heritage Foundation because, hey, you know, they keep spreading the money around. It was their 50th anniversary gala. And in that 50th anniversary, think about the damage the Heritage Foundation has done in 50 years. I mean, because understand, the Heritage Foundation came out of the whole Powell memo from 1971. So just 2 years later, they built this and fund the Heritage Foundation. And look, out of that sprung all of these think tanks, all of the state policy network, all of these euphemistically named groups like, you know, for the love of apple pie and mom or, you know, whatever, who are doing just the worst things to our country. But with such happy sounding names. But evidently, Tucker gave a speech where I guess the religion thing supposedly went a little too far for Rupert Murdoch, you know, in framing it in those religious terms of, he was just a battle between good and evil. And, you know, if you know, we let that DEI and those trans people exist, they're going to destroy the country. So we need to pray. And what it's being reported is that's it's a bit too far. And I guess he did it again. And the next day, which, you know, caught Rupert's attention, and I guess from what the source is now saying, that kind of stuff freaks Rupert out. He doesn't like all the spiritual talk, and for me, that makes perfect sense. You just go, you know, I had enough. Yeah, it's interesting. And maybe not surprising. You know, there's, you know, I've said before, you know, part of what freaks me out is you get these people who talk about freedom, but don't understand what it means, and then use it in the context of religion. And only, of course, only their religion, not yours or anyone else's or freedom from. It's just theirs, their narrow-minded belief. And this is not what I grew up believing this country was about. You have the right to pursue your path, unencumbered by others, as long as you're not infringing on their rights. And this is the world that I believe in. And because I've had a bunch of people go, well, why do you care about all these other fringe issues? You're an economics guy. You're a guy who wants, who fights for people to join unions and get better wages. All of that plays together. Because if we don't have the freedom to be who we are and go where we want to go and do what we want to do because somebody, well, like Schmucker, has a problem with that, do you really have freedom? I know you love it. It looks good on a T-shirt. But in practice, it's a little more difficult. Anyway, I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Crazy emails go to the top. I actually prefer those.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.